Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Jerusalem Passport Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 3, 2014, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Zivotofsky v. Carey. This case concerns Section 214D of the Foreign Relations Authorization Act of 2003, which directs the Secretary of State, upon request, to record the birthplace of an American citizen born in Jerusalem as born in Israel on a consular report of birth abroad and on a United States passport. The question before the court is whether this provision unconstitutionally infringes on the president's power to recognize foreign sovereigns. To discuss the case, we have Eugene Kontorovich, who is a professor of law at the Northwestern University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Kontorovich.
Zivotofsky versus Clinton, to be decided by the Supreme Court this year, potentially raises serious issues about the division of foreign relations powers between the legislative and the executive branches. It involves a law passed in 2002, which says that on passports of citizens of the United States born in Jerusalem, the State Department has to write Israel for place of birth under the country entry for under the place of birth entry on the passport. So all U.S. citizens' passports have a line that reflects their place of birth, and what's contained there is typically the name of the country in which they were born. The United States has, for quite a long time, had a policy for people born in Jerusalem to not write Israel, or Palestine for that matter, but simply to write Jerusalem. The reason for that policy is because it's the position of the United States that Jerusalem, not just the eastern part that came under Israeli control in 1967, but West Jerusalem, where the Knesset is, which has always been under Israeli control, is not part of the sovereign state of Israel. So while the United States recognizes the sovereign state of Israel and recognizes the government that sits in Jerusalem, it doesn't recognize Jerusalem as part of Israel, and so merely Jerusalem is written on the passport. And the law, which is part of the Foreign Affairs Appropriations Act, said, no, State Department, you know, you have to, with the money that you get from us, write Israel there. Or at least, actually, the law has an important caveat that it says that you have to write Israel when the bearer of the passport, when the passport applicant, asks for Israel to be entered. So if someone doesn't want it to say Israel, they will not be forced to have that reflected on the passport, only if the bearer elects to. Now, the president never implemented this policy, despite the law being signed into law, on the grounds that the president says that this implicates the foreign affairs power of the president, and in particular, the president's powers over recognition, which the executive branch now says is exclusive. So recognition is the power of the government to recognize foreign countries or foreign governments. Where does the executive branch get this power? It's either penumbra of the ambassador's clause, which says the president has exclusive power to receive ambassadors. You might think that to receive ambassadors, you have to decide if the country they present their credentials from actually exists and whether the government they present their credentials from actually exists. Another possibility is it's just part of a broad, unwritten foreign affairs power. Now, Congress also has powers over foreign affairs. In particular, they can declare war, which often requires deciding what countries exist in the world, conduct foreign trade, and so forth. However, it's been traditionally thought that recognition is a power in which the president has a fairly significant role, greater than Congress. So the argument here made by the executive branch in resisting this law is that, first of all, the recognition power is exclusively presidential, and this is more importantly, that this is an intrusion by Congress in recognition. The Congress is effectively performing a legal act of recognition, which also they don't have constitutionally the authority to do. Now, the plaintiffs, who are American citizen, a boy actually, born in Jerusalem, who wants it to say Israel on his passport. And the plaintiffs, Zagotovsky, along with Amicus Briefs for Congress, they make a series of counterarguments. I think the most important is they say, no, this is not an act of recognition. Congress is not saying that Israel contains Jerusalem. Rather, they're saying that because Israel has de facto control over the territory, and because people might like it to say Israel, the bearers of the passport might be happier to have us reflected, the bearers of the passport should have a choice, kind of like one of these affiliative license plates that states let people get. But the Congress isn't recognizing Israel, because recognition is a formal legal act. You say, we hereby recognize, and so forth. And this wasn't about that. This was just simply, what does it say on internal U.S. government documents? And it was established during discovery that really the point of the passport's entry about place of birth is not to make statements about sovereignty, but rather as an internal American administrative matter to help people in the State Department identify Americans traveling abroad. So this isn't the kind of instrument you typically associate with an act of recognition. And as was pointed out in an amicus brief by law professors, authored by myself and Alan Gora, it's a little strange to speak of this as an act of recognition, because recognition classically is one of two kinds. You can either recognize countries, or you can recognize, and then secondarily recognize, what is the legitimate government of the country. Now, the United States already recognizes the country called Israel. The United States recognizes Israel as a sovereign state. There's no doubt about that. And the United States also recognizes the government of Israel. So this is really more a question about geography, about how to refer to a particular place, and is there some constitutional principle limiting how Congress can talk about this place, Jerusalem, which the United States agrees is under Israeli control. So the plaintiff also argues that the foreign affairs recognition power is not exclusive in the president. And this debate involves a lot of history from the early republic, involving cases where Congress has done things that did look like recognitions or rejecting recognitions of rebellious Latin, of new Latin American countries in the early 19th century. So how do these arguments stack up? Now, the argument that formal recognition of countries is an area where the president has primacy is a fairly strong one. This history from the early 19th century makes it a lot less obvious than one might have thought. But this is an area where people think, you know, the executive probably has a fairly strong case, though far from insurmountable. And it's not clear that the Supreme Court would want to rule on this issue, because really it's almost one of first impression. There are many cases in which the court said that executive decisions about recognition are going to be binding on the courts, but not one where they have said that the president's decisions are entirely binding on Congress, even to the extent of effectively rendering unconstitutional otherwise valid legislation. Because everyone agrees, generally, the content of passports is a valid subject for Congress to legislate about. However, the argument that this is not a formal act of recognition, it might be a political act, it might be a wink at recognition, but it is not recognition de jure per se in its strictest sense, where the president would have the highest powers, but rather an exercise of Congress's powers. And Congress has power over immigration and movement in and out of the country, which is exactly what the passport is supposed to facilitate, and which the identification provision on the passport is supposed to facilitate the State Department helping Americans with. So the way we know it's not recognition came up at oral argument. And at oral argument, perhaps one of the strongest questions posed against the government was, couldn't the president the president's argument is that by writing Israel on the passport, we are sending a message to the international community that we recognize Israel, Jerusalem as part of Israel, and we don't want to do that, A, because we don't recognize it, and B, because it will cause foreign policy headaches. Okay, so by the way, the foreign policy headaches argument is quite weak, and I think that's one of the weakest arguments for the executive. The fact that something is going to not be that countries will not react well to something Congress does is not a reason to hold legislation unconstitutional. That would give foreign countries effectively a veto on otherwise valid legislation. But the better part of that is that this would be seen as a recognition. Now, you can ask, why would it be seen as a recognition if the president is saying it's not a recognition? And the president says, I'm the one who recognizes, and I'm not recognizing. So why would anyone see this as a recognition? And the way you can really see this, a nice proof, which was mentioned in some earlier writings, and was specifically raised by Justice Kennedy, the swing justice in oral argument, was, couldn't the government put a big disclaimer on the bottom of the passport saying, the listing of Jerusalem, the listing of Israel, as potentially including Jerusalem, does not constitute a recognition of Jerusalem as part of sovereign Israel by the United States, and is simply the State Department following the law of Congress. So if that were to be done, then there'd be no possible confusion that this was an act of recognition. And, of course, the Solicitor General had to agree that, indeed, the United States, the State Department, could issue such a disclaimer. Where did they get this idea for the disclaimer from? That's exactly what the United States does with the Taiwan passport. Congress passed a similar law saying that Taiwan should be listed on the passports of U.S. citizens born in Taiwan, even though the United States does not recognize Taiwan, rather only the communist China, which claims Taiwan as part of it. So there's a disclaimer there. Why can't the disclaimer work here as well? Nobody thinks the United States recognizes Taiwan as an independent country because of the Taiwan passport law. Now, the strongest question of the oral argument posed against the plaintiff was that isn't Congress really, why did Congress pass this law? Does Congress really care about regulating the method in which people are identified on passports? No, they want to send a signal of recognition about Jerusalem, and this can be inferred maybe from other parts of the law, which also discuss moving the embassy to Jerusalem. Okay, now, the response to that could be, Congress wants to send a message about what it thinks is the status of Jerusalem, what it thinks. But that doesn't mean that it is performing an act of recognition, especially if those acts can only be done by the president acting spontaneously. Now, ultimately, it seems there's a lot of room for the court to rule that this is not an act of recognition, but merely an exercise of Congress's sovereign powers, because as is explained in our amicus brief, it turns out Congress has many times passed laws that explicitly relate to countries that aren't recognized by the United States. For example, Gulf of Tonkin Resolution authorizes war against North Vietnam, even though the United States doesn't recognize North Vietnam. A variety of trade laws specifically name various unrecognized entities, from Nagorno-Karabakh to Taiwan and Western Sahara, to engage in foreign trade, commerce, or spending with. So the fact that Congress names or insists on naming a non-recognized entity to exercise its Article I powers upon is in no way act of recognition. And indeed, if the court were to hold so, it would endanger the constitutionality of lots of other foreign commerce, foreign trade laws, foreign spending laws that have long been assumed to be constitutional.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.